welcome to Show Me Your Mic, a podcast about podcasting, which, as you may know, you can find online at goodstuff.fm/smym or on Twitter at smym_fm. I'm your host, Chris Enns, and for this episode, I've got Aaron Mankey. Aaron's only about six episodes in, as of this recording, to his new podcast, Lore, a bi-weekly podcast about the history behind scary stories. But his attention to all the details of producing a story-driven podcast has resulted in unexpected but definitely well-deserved attention and popularity. We chat about all the work that goes on in producing an episode of Lore and also where he's hoping to take it. Lots of great stuff in this episode, so enjoy my conversation with Aaron.
It's different than the normal stuff you bump into out there, for sure. So
yeah, and especially in our, well, let's just make this the show because we're
This is when Dave and I do homework. We spend like 15 minutes beforehand before we hit record, and we realize, okay, we just talked for 10 minutes about show stuff. Let's just do this on the show.
Yeah, so, exactly. That's why I hit record as soon as I called you, because I know that's one lesson I've learned, if anything, in podcasting with these 80 some episodes of this show, anyways, is just hit record. Don't wait. So let's talk about homework first, just to sort of get that one not out of the way. You have 162 episodes of the show as of this recording, so it's a big chunk of work, obviously. Yeah. But it's probably something that folks will be generally more familiar with in the world of podcasting. But what is that show about, and what are you doing with it?
Well, so Homework was born out of my friend Dave Kahlo and I. Dave, he wrote for 10 years over at the unofficial Apple weblog, otherwise known as Tua. He now writes over at appleworld.today. He's a phenomenal writer and editor, and he works from home. I mean, that's how he's done it. He was a telecommuter working for AOL to write on the unofficial Apple weblog. And I'm a freelance designer, so I work for myself from home. So we both kind of have the same basic work setup, except that I work for myself and he works for somebody else. And until recently, when he went full-time freelance on his own as well, thanks to AOL doing that thing that companies like to do and shutting them down. A little over 3 years ago, Dave and I were talking and said, it'd be really good to just see if we could try doing a show. I don't know how long it can last. And I was thinking, maybe we get a year out of this, or, a couple dozen episodes or whatever, and just talk about what challenges we have and solutions we have for working from home efficiently. And here we are, 162 episodes in, and it's fantastic. We're on the 5x5 network. We've got a lot of good other shows around us, and a lot of listener interaction and stuff. So it's been really good.
Nice. Yeah. And that's you take listener requests, submitted questions and stuff as well.
Yeah.
And,
yeah. I highly recommend that. I mean, Google Docs has such a great way to set up a nice little form for free if you've got a Gmail login. So, set up a Google form for a podcast if somebody's doing one, and just take submissions. It goes right into a spreadsheet. We can, highlight the row that the question's on, so we know that's the one we're talking about. Just from a organizational standpoint, it's super easy.
Yeah, so it's easy for you guys to share the doc, obviously. Do you use a Google Doc as well to sort of organize your own internal show notes or whatever for the show as you prep for it, or how does that work?
Yeah, when the mood strikes. Dave and I are, we've done this enough that we will often say, what are we talking about today? Right before we're going to actually record. So,
right.
it's like Lore that I do as my, my little fun project, and Homework are just completely different animals in the way that they're made up and prepared for and delivered. So
yeah, that's what I think was so intriguing to have you on the show, because I feel like the Homework podcast is probably familiar format to a lot of the listeners of this show anyways. Mm-hmm. Lore would be that is obviously newer for you, and that style is definitely common these days, but it's a lot of typically, anyways, big productions, NPR, et cetera. We're familiar with Serial, and mm-hmm. where there's a lot of people involved in producing this. As far as I could tell from quickly scanning the website, this is the first time you and I have chatted, so I think it's just you behind Lore, if I'm not mistaken, right?
So, yeah, it is. Yeah,
yeah, which is a little different than a team.
It is. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely not Serial, as far as the bankroll and the staff and everything goes. So
right,
there's a lot on my shoulders.
So talk to me, I guess, about where the idea for this podcast came from, first of all, and we'll get into the how it comes out each time second, I guess.
Well, as I said, I'm a full-time designer, so I do a lot of icons and logos and UI and things like that. That's what I do as my job, help a lot of businesses with their marketing things. But
where's your, you can put a plug for your website if you want.
Oh yeah, sure. It's Wet Frog Studios.
There you go.
Wetfrogstudios.com. And I've been around for almost 10 years now doing that kind of stuff. So the original Mac, Minimal Mac logo was mine. The original Drafts icon for, remember, you know, the Drafts app that everybody loves to use. The original was my icon. And I still miss that. So you have to have a hobby though. So you have to have something that you love to do. And my hobby is writing fiction. I like to write supernatural thrillers. So I've put two books out that are available on Amazon. I've got a third that's coming out next month. And that's how I fill my spare time, is by writing. And, you know, you get into the world of self-publishing and trying to find a way to get more book sales and spread the word. And one of the things you bump into a lot is people will say, well, you've got to build a mailing list. And I realize that that's advice that exists outside of the publishing industry too. You know, you've got to build a mailing list for X, Y, and Z, whatever it is, podcasting even. And it's a good way to stay in contact with your listeners/readers, whatever it is. And then the other advice I heard was, well, you have to have something to give them to sign up, you know, some sort of incentive to jump on the list. And, so I started thinking about it, and I write these fun, you know, thrillers with a supernatural bent. And in the process of writing them, I do a lot of research and bump into a lot of great stories and legends and creatures. And I decided, since I live in New England, which is, and literally I'm in Old Salem Village, which is where the Salem witch trials began. I'm just, you know, 10 miles away from Salem, the city where the trials and the executions happened. And it's a real rich area for history and lore and things like that. Right. So I thought, you know, what better giveaway than for me to write up like my top five New England myths, you know, just things that are interesting to people that have a supernatural bent to them, but to also look at the historical background in them so that it's not just a fantasy read. It's more of a, you know, wow, some of this stuff actually happened, or some of these things that happened, there's a kernel of truth at the bottom of it that's actually there, you know? So I wrote this thing. I got four of the five of them done. I was running out of time on the other one. And I guess I started to feel some doubt, you know, that is anybody going to download this? Is anybody going to read it? And you know what, like half a dozen people are going to finally get this thing after all this work. So I don't know why. I just had the idea, maybe if I just recorded these five stories as audio digestible things that people could download them. And then that's where it went.
Nice.
So that's, it just kind of was born from there. So lore was actually, it makes some people get a little irritated when I tell them this, but I mean, it's been incredibly successful and beyond any, obviously by what I just told you, I had no expectations at all. I thought some of my friends had passed the audio link around, you know, through Droppler or whatever. And I decided to put it on iTunes as a podcast and just see. I thought I'd burn out after a couple episodes. But it was all written. The first episode that's in iTunes, called They Made a Tonic, is about, some stuff that happened in Rhode Island. That's just fascinating stuff. And it was all written. I just had to edit it a little bit, because when you write for reading, you write a little different than you write for spoken word. Mm-hmm. So I had to edit, just, you know, sometimes you throw in contractions because it flows easier off the tongue, things that sound more natural and less awkward. Mm-hmm. I did that editing, recorded it, decided to lay some music underneath the track, spaced it out a little bit for pacing, and was done all within about 2 hours. So it was one of those, you know, moments where you're just working in a flurry. Let me just get this idea off my chest. And in one evening I had it done. And then I went and built the website and said, all right, you know, put the sign out and here we go. We're live. So yeah.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is you're, I was following along, sort of scanning through your tweets, which now you're, like you said, you're at episode six now, but you're tweeting, you know, where is it here? Over 2,000 downloads per hour is normal, right? And often, which I'm assuming that's talking about the podcast, right?
That was yesterday's launch.
Yeah. And so, which often podcasters, there's this inherent kind of like bashfulness or false humility or whatever, privacy about download numbers and listener numbers and, you know, all the stats. And I guess you don't want to be bragging too much or whatever, but it's just kind of interesting and fun to read along, I guess, as you're going through this, like, and hearing your side of it too, and knowing that it was kind of just an experiment and maybe 10 people will listen or whatever kind of idea, and have it sort of explode in your face a bit is kind of fun. But I guess when you're, did you release it as the book as well still, or just, you just went just audio?
I just went audio, you know, so I do a lot of layout design. I'll have companies that hire me to do annual reports, you know, large format books. And I also lay out books for authors. So I like putting words on a page and making them look nice in, you know, normal parlance. And so I had a friend who said, you should do a transcript of these episodes. And I said, I do, you know, and I sent him a link to the first one. And the comment that he said was, wow, you painted the back of the fence. You know, a lot of people who do show transcripts, just they take the text, somebody transcribes it for them, or, you know, they do their best. They throw it in Word and they put up a nice blank, you know, PDF that's just black and white. But mine, I like to make sure that the font looks good, that links are clearly links. They're branded to the color scheme from the website, and it's got a logo in there and it looks good. So initially what I was doing was offering a PDF transcript, just, you know, spit out of Apple's Pages program. Nothing immensely fancy. That was on the website to download. And a couple of weeks in, I decided that, you know, maybe this is something that I could get onto Patreon and see if people wanted to support me there. And a transcript made sense as a reward. So now the only way to get the transcript for free is to get on, and here we have come full circle, get on a mailing list and I'll email it to you. And it still looks fantastic. It looks pretty much the same as it does in Pages. But my Patreon backers, if they give me $1 a month, I send them the what used to be on the website, the nice Pages laid out one. And then for people who are $5 or higher, I've been doing a premium one where I jump into InDesign and I basically make a magazine out of the transcript. I bring in photos that, you know, either highlight some of the facts or they were inspiration for some of the tales, and it provides a bit more mood, and it just has a more professional feel to it. So that's been really fun to do, because I'm a designer. I like doing those things.
Yeah, which, I mean, you could argue, I guess, that it makes it somewhat easier for you to then offer those things as rewards. Because I was going to say, for podcasters, looking at through your Patreon page, it's a great collection of ideas that I think, I don't know, traditional podcasters might not have thought of as being a thing to offer for a reward or for membership or whatever your situation might be, whether you're using Patreon or whatever. But, a physical thing, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the rewards at $10 a month, I decided because I publish my own fiction and I help other people put together things like, you know, ebooks for Kindle and Nook and all that, I know how all of that works and it's part of my job. So what a great way to offer a reward to somebody than to take, you know, the full year's worth of transcript text, lay it out in a paperback book, and send them that paperback book as a reward. And then they've got something that's on their shelf, and, you know, and it can say something like, you know, like the Lore 2015 anthology, and all the transcripts are in there. And it, you know, because of the cost restrictions to print on demand, you can't do color images and whatnot, but just getting the text in there would be super helpful. So, and then obviously ebooks as well. In ebooks, you can do hyperlinks and make them a little bit more interactive. What it comes down to is a difference in genre. You know, I don't think that a tech talking heads show can take a 3-hour show and do a transcript and have it be desirable or interesting. Plus, it's not timeless. You know, it's material that 2 or 3 weeks later sometimes isn't even worth listening to anymore because they're talking about an iOS update or, exactly. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that kind of stuff because I know a lot of people really like the intricacies of that tech scene. But what you get out of, like, what the scraps on the floor aren't as reward worthy. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
no, exactly.
My transcripts, and that's the way my Lore episodes start, is I write them first. I write them to be spoken. I read them through a couple times, and then I hit record, you know, and then I do what I can to make it as professional as possible. So.
Yeah, well, and that's like, I'll probably say in the intro of this show, but it was a sort of a last minute scheduling thing that got us together on this show. And so I haven't listened to all the episodes, but the half of the sixth episode, as of this recording, anyways, I listened to, is great production quality. And I was going to say, for folks who have maybe never thought about the idea of scripting, and sometimes podcasters think of scripting as a bad word, maybe, and like it takes away the spontaneity of what you're about to do or whatever. And it, you know, it's each kind of show is different, obviously, and whether it works or not. But I know for myself, when I've tried that, and I was recently on got accepted into the listserv and wrote an email on there. And I thought, oh yeah, I like podcasting. Why don't I also record an audio version of this email and put it out on one of my other shows, Dailyish? And it was just a unique experience to actually read it out loud, which I wouldn't have normally done when I wrote it. And then getting the response from people who were like, hey, it was great to hear your voice, you know, saying this stuff that I was reading. And I'll, you know, obviously there's a promotional angle of hoping few of the 20,000 people would check out the podcast. But and for like, we've done it maybe for ad reads and stuff for segments of your show, if you've done that. But I love that idea of thinking it through in writing and then reading that out. And
I think some of the complaints that people have about ad reads, and you know, maybe on ad reads for specific companies that they hear a lot of ad reads from, is that it feels like an ad read. And part of that to me, this is just my personal opinion, but I think part of that is preparation. You know, if you could just take the time to take the script that the sponsor gives you, number one, ask them if you can tweak that. You know, let them know, I have, you know, my audience is unique to my show. Can I craft this just a little bit to fit the style of my diction, the style of my audience? And that alone can help it be less read-like. And then, you know, if you know the material well, you should be able to speak it in a way that doesn't sound like you're reading from a script. I mean, I do that thing where I read reviews of my own podcast in iTunes. Adam Savage from the Mythbusters, he's got a great podcast, one of my favorites. And he calls that cutting, you know, the term for people who cut themselves to feel the pain. Right. And reading your own reviews, according to him, is cutting. And I can see that. But a lot of people will say it doesn't sound scripted whatsoever, you know, and I'm glad to hear that, because if you write it right, those are two different spellings, then it will roll off the tongue a lot more conversationally and naturally. And of course, when I'm talking on homework or even on here, I'm off the cuff. I'm talking a little faster than I normally do. I'm on Lore. With Lore, I've got pages up on the screen. I've got GarageBand next to it, and I can hit record, and I can, before I start, I can take a deep breath and I can just pace myself and take my time. Because part of storytelling is pacing and bringing people into a paragraph or a tale at the right speed. So I'm able to do that a bit more with Lore.
So maybe talk, like, obviously, without going too far down the writer's rabbit hole, I guess, or trail, but when you're writing out your script for an episode, what is the process that, like, do you just sort of, I guess, talk me through the process of going from draft to just before you hit record, but actually, you know, in the writing process of the script?
For me, a lot of things start in Evernote. So I use that to capture, I'll use the web clipper in Safari on my laptop or my desktop, and I'll grab articles about, so I'll pick a topic, and I've got a list of topics for future episodes, and I'll say, all right, what's the next one I'm working on? And then I'll just do, you know, a ton of research. And a lot of times, I don't know why, but this is when it happens, I'm laying in bed at night with my phone in front of me, and I can still do that because of the nice, whatever they call it,
the sharing tray with
Evernote in there. So I'll just grab lots and lots of links, and then the next phase for me is just to read everything. I just read all the stuff that I found, and I've got to weed out the crackpots from the, you know, the good historical stuff. I'm dealing with cryptozoology and mythology and monster stories, and of course there's a lot of crackpot stuff.
Right.
But my goal at the end is to have a full grasp of what we know about a certain topic, and then sit down and put together a real rough outline. And then the outline, I might research certain points of it deeper to flesh those out. Sometimes, and I don't have a lot of data to work off of because I only released episode 6 yesterday, but what will happen frequently is I will sit down with an outline, I'll start writing, and then I'll realize the entire episode needs to be about one of those 5 bullet points, and I just have to toss the rest out the window. Mm. And that happened with episode 7, which I've actually written and finished production. It's just waiting to go live in 2 weeks. I sat down expecting to write one thing and it ended up being something completely different. And that happens sometimes. Sometimes you just have to let the material guide you that way. So I'll write it, I'll print it out, and then I'll edit it with a red pen because that's how I like to edit stuff. And then I'll type my corrections in and read through it a couple times. Reading through it for me lets me know a couple things. It lets me know how long the episode might be. And then each segment has a rough length depending on how slowly I read it. And that will tell me how long of a song do I need to cover that segment. And I tend to do, you know, one track per segment.
Right. Yeah. Okay. There's a few things to unpack there. I'm trying to remember now. I was making notes, but going back to say Evernote, just for a second, it's one of those tools for me. And maybe this is a selfish question. I should, maybe listeners are already well beyond me on this, but like the actual specifics of how you use it, where you're, I understand the idea of throwing links into there, but then as you, let's say you find an article that's good and then you find an article that's bad, what do you do with those two tracks, paths you can go down, I guess. Does that make sense?
Kind of. I mean, I usually end up deleting the bad stuff. Unless it provides me a little bit of fodder for future fiction, then I'll move it to a different folder in Evernote where it can exist as, you know, like fiction research. But all of those articles that are for the current episode sit at, they kind of float. You know how Evernote will sort things based on when you've last edited them.
Right.
And what I'll do is I'll go through and highlight with the highlight tool in the same app. I'll highlight paragraphs that are really important, which causes them to keep floating to the top, so they're always there. And then when the episode's done, I'll tag them with specifics to the episode topic, and then I'll move them to a folder where they just go into cold storage.
Nice. So, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm an organizational freak. I love putting things in boxes and folders, and I'm still, I mean, you know, I realize Apple wants everybody to just put everything in one big documents folder and then search and filter, and I can't do that. I'm a nested folder for life, and that's just how I am.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you on that one too, for sure. And that was just always a thing for me. There was nothing, I couldn't figure out a good workflow, I guess, with Evernote to like, and which adding a specific tag to a note or whatever after the fact, once you've decided where it should go, makes complete sense, and that does actually help me with thinking about how I should be using it sometimes, and because I never understood how people use it with it, because it felt like this sort of clunky GUI to organize stuff in for me, but each to their own. Obviously, we don't need to.
Well, the beauty of tags too is that something can be relevant to, you know, multiple topics.
Yeah,
and all you have to do is get yourself to commit to one place to put it. You know, that. I tend to import things like when you use the web clipper, let me just hit the hotkey, which is the key right underneath the escape key. That, what do they call that? The tilde?
Yeah.
I hit that and the web clipper pops up. And I'll tag things with what I think are relevant tags. I'll have it organized to the folder I want it to go, which is my lore folder. But I always do the simplified article if I can, because it gets rid of a lot of the crap on the web pages. And just saves me the text. Sometimes the way that the page is formatted, because remember, again, I'm working with spooky stories and people tend to get really creative. I use air quotes for the word creative with how they design their web pages, you know, like black background with yellow text and weird things. So sometimes I have to go with the full article because it won't grab the text otherwise.
Right.
So that's how it is. And you know, once it's in there, as long as you have a place to put it, tags will help you find anything. It's so great.
Yeah. And then writing a script and how, like, sort of preparing the script again up until you hit record, how long is that process so far? Anyways, six episodes in, obviously.
It's proven to be, like, the writing of it is usually a 3 to 4 hour process to get it from outline to polished, you know, nugget to be read out loud. And then the actual reading, recording, and then producing is maybe another hour and a half. So they're short episodes. You know, I'm talking 20 minutes and that's about it.
Yeah. But again, that's where I think folks who've maybe tried podcasting and feel like what you're doing is either, well, I don't know, either I could see people being in two camps of like, that's pretty easy. Just puts like talks for 15 minutes about something, no big deal. Or in like the holy crap, that must take forever camp. Those two extremes of it. And realizing it's sort of somewhere in the middle of, you know, 5 to 6 hours kind of, but for a end product that's about 15 to 20 minutes, which it shows in the polish of the episode, but that I think would help folks anyways, listeners of this show anyways, who maybe are thinking about experimenting with something a little more produced or researched than just the sort of typical, you know, interview or show like this, or off the cuff tech podcast or whatever, just trying to get a gauge for what's actually going to be required of you to do something like that. And obviously you get better with it over time, but it still just is going to take time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's about caring about all the parts. You know, you could find somebody who says, oh, I could research that kind of stuff, you know, and maybe they could even write a, you know, 7 or 8 page paper on that topic, but caring about the delivery too is super important. At the end of the day, when somebody hits play in their podcast app, what they're listening to is the level of quality of your production and your delivery, and the research that went into an episode. It kind of comes into play, but I feel like that melts into the background a little bit more.
Right. It's, you know? But it is one of those things where, especially in this, I don't know if genre is the right word of podcasts, but because obviously you could have a subgenre, I guess. Of,
right, right.
But whatever we call this sort of produced or whatever kind of podcast, it really falls flat pretty quickly if the research isn't there, even though the audio is good or whatever. And it seems like other podcasts, you know, like we've sort of harped on a bit of the tech podcast, which again, I love listening to those too. That's,
yeah.
And that would be a natural thing for me to even just start doing as a podcast, is that idea. Cause it would be easy, air quotes, to do, like not easy to do really well, but easy to mm-hmm. do. Cause I could just like I talk with my buddies about Apple's latest thing or whatever. But this kind of podcast, it feels like if the music is wrong, the research is weird and not doesn't really make sense, mm-hmm. doesn't flow. There's a lot of elements where it can just fall pretty quickly if they're not all supported equally well. So
yeah. Well, and it's you just can't write something that gets the facts in too. I mean, I sometimes have to force myself to remember that this is it's factual. Yeah, there's story, there's eyewitness accounts. You can't say that all of this is completely factual, but I have to write it like fiction. I have to write it with the inclination of what can I use to hook people into the story, keep them interested, and then what can I give them as that final little bit at the end that makes them, you know, have that aha moment of, oh, wow, that makes sense now. And then the episode's over and now you want more, you know? Right. And it's, yeah. And that's what an author does. That's what, you know, you're writing short stories or novels or whatever. That's your goal, is to, you want people to end that story, even if there's low points in the middle of it. You know, you want them to end that story by saying, wow, I didn't see that coming. I want more of that, you know? And so hopefully that's what's happening with this show.
Right. Cause I mean, obviously you could just end with like, here's the facts about, whatever,
asylums, nice and cold.
And yeah, et cetera. Yeah. And then come back next time and we'll talk about something else. But yeah, maybe I didn't get to the end, so I didn't get the hook yet, but I'm still hooked. So. Well,
and what I really discovered, I didn't go into this thinking about this, but all these episode topics, there is an element of anthropology and just studying of human culture that's happening while you do this. I mean, myths and legends and horror stories and all these things that get passed down through the centuries, they're all reflections of some quality of humanity, you know, and that's what I didn't expect when I was doing these. And so it's kind of become standard for me to take a moment in an episode and point out, you know, maybe we're believing this thing because of this flaw within our character, you know, and, you know, I don't know how deep you've gotten into the newest episode, but, you know, the talk of Dr. Freeman and the lobotomies and his practice and what he did, this idea that, you know, some people still don't believe in monsters, and yet here was this guy who did these things, you know, without spoilers, who for all intents and purposes was a monster, you know? And so we might say, I don't believe in monsters, but the real monsters are the people around us. They always have been. So for me, that means I've got a lot of story material.
Yeah. There's a creepy one to unpack that thought, but yeah. I mean, it's true in terms of the without going really bizarre or whatever, but the even sexual assault and things that people mm-hmm. hear about, they're worried about some stranger, but actually the stats show that it's more often not someone you know. And so just that idea, right. Which that's a whole other podcast, a whole other discussion. But
no, but I mean, yeah, you would think that a podcast about the history behind scary stories would be just that. But in a lot of ways, it's also and I didn't intend it, and I'm not qualified to do it, but it has become kind of an analysis of human nature.
Yeah, and, that's interesting.
And it's fun. It's and I don't necessarily set out to say, all right, what do I want to say about human nature in this episode? I just go with the material and the topic that I want to research. You know, if I'm going to do like, you know, the Jersey Devil or something, I'll research all I can about that. But after I've read everything, I'm going to walk away with a feeling of, you know, whatever it is about that topic that's really clear about human nature, some flaw, some need, some mistake or whatever.
And so. Within that, I guess I was going to ask you about sort of the idea of, you know, this created work now, episode 6, let's say, or episode 5, whichever one, but as being complete, but then there's, you know, new information could come to light. And I guess you could just do a revise or a new version or episode 25 or whatever would be a, let's go back and talk about this again or whatever, but as a writer, I guess you have familiarity with that where you're putting out a book and it's done, even though, you know, 2 months later you might be like, oh shoot, I should have talked about X, Y, or Z instead of, or, you know, or whatever. Is that kind of, do you have sort of, I don't know what it would be called, editor's regret maybe of when you've published an episode and then find something else that you should have included, or is that not?
I haven't experienced that yet. What I'm experiencing right now is telling, like, if I was to sit down and say everything, and, you know, say I didn't give myself a time cap. I didn't say, you know, 20 minutes is nothing. I'll just keep talking. I'm afraid of eating up in a small dose, a topic that could be its own episode. You know, when I did the episode 3, which was on werewolves, there's a story that I just couldn't include because it so clearly represents a very different topic, even though it's about werewolves, that I had to save that for that topic down the road. I just knew I'm going to be able to get a whole topic out of this idea. I can't use this werewolf story because it's just too good to waste as a small illustration now. It needs to be a big illustration later. And what I noticed that when I was writing it, and now I've just become a little bit more paranoid about that. And I think, all right, should I use this part for this thing? Because if I do, it's done. But if I save it, does it fit into anything else down the road? And right. I used so many non-specifics in that statement that I don't know if it made any sense. But
no, I know what you mean, because you could. I mean, well, I'm getting distracted now because I'm reading this title of or the description of episode 3, which is just says, just to tease listeners and maybe let them go check it out, is in 1582, the German town of Bedburg was ravaged by a violent and mysterious creature. After untold bloodshed, the townsfolk. This is where we need your music to background this. But the townsfolk took up arms and hunted the monster down. What they found was something out of our deepest nightmares and entirely too close to home, which is like, okay, I just want to stop our interview to go listen, which is great. But yeah, I can understand what you're saying, though, in terms of like, I could, the one segment that you're talking about could actually be broken down into further, which, I mean, bringing that out back into podcasting stuff, you know, as I talk with guests about one thing, microphones or whatever, and get too far down that road, I could just have an episode of microphones instead of et cetera. Yeah. And that would be a struggle. But then I think you're also in this medium that's very forgiving, right? Where you, and people are jumping in at random points too. And so episode 15 might be someone else's first episode they listen to. And it's actually a referral back to, okay, werewolves in whatever, North America or something,
right?
That
right.
builds off of that, or goes a little deeper than you did the first time around, or something like that, or new information has come to light. But yeah, that would be a struggle. Yeah. Referencing the music, and you talked about it earlier, of having sort of one song per section. How do you go about this eternal podcaster dilemma of music that's legal and appropriate and not super expensive? And there's probably another variable, but going with those three anyways, how are you overcoming that with, like you said, I don't know how many per episode, but a 15-minute show or whatever, you're probably...
4 or 5 songs you know, per episode. You know, a lot of times it's as simple as going to someplace like SoundCloud and doing searches for Creative Commons music and then getting into the genre that you need it to be in. I you'll notice if you listen to a number of episodes, I kind of prefer kind of that instrumental Nine Inch Nails kind of, you know, low-key... sound. And in fact, episode 3, right around that time, I realized, and I don't know if you're a huge Trent Reznor Nine Inch Nails fan, but he put out an album a few years ago called Ghosts, and it's a 4-disc kind of experiment in instrumental sound, and it's fantastic. And it's Creative Commons. I mean, he released it and said, you know, go and do stuff with it, just attribute it. So for episode 3, I was actually able to use some Nine Inch Nails and lay the audio on top of that. And I had some people on Twitter who were like, wow, you got Trent Reznor to do the music for your show. And I'm thinking, no, I didn't.
But that's great that you think
he's this kind of artist who's, he just believes in, you know, music belongs to everybody. I'm going to put that out there. Of course, you know, he's wealthy enough to be able to afford an opinion like that. But he put out Ghosts and said, hey, this is Creative Commons. And he's even said he hopes to get back to that project and do more sets of that stuff. So it's good. Some of the tracks aren't usable because there's, you know, the rhythm's too heavy or there's too much screeching guitar or whatever. But you know, you find good stuff in there and that's what it's about. And just kind of setting a tone. And a song might be good for one portion of an episode. You know, maybe like the you know, we're in safe territory, I just want to share some historical data with you kind of segment. But then when things kind of turn that dark corner and they get a little bit more real and frightening, the music has to change tone, you know? And so some weeks I really feel like I'm scoring a Hollywood film, you know, in the sense that I'm trying to create emotion, not just with the words that I'm writing and saying, but also with the music I'm putting underneath it all. So.
Yeah. And do you find, I guess you could go one of two ways with it, where you could feel like you're either over manipulating the audience with music. I find myself easily drawn into music, and whether it's like just, you know, music you listen to, bands, yeah, or whatever, or actually like soundtracks from movies and TV shows and stuff, and easily drawn into that stuff. And so then when I'm using music, whether I'm performing live or music elsewhere, I sometimes worry about sort of like playing to that, knowing that if I hit this chord here or whatever, it's just going to make it's emotional response. Or do you just sort of run with that and try and like, because the tendency or the impulse might be to just have like, you know, the horror strings in the background and the whatever all the time. Yeah. And yeah, how do you sort of balance that aspect when you're doing music production for the episodes?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to overstay my welcome in that emotional realm,
right,
you know, the entire episode. And so, you know, one of the things I have going for me is that because it's a light volume music of whatever I do pick underneath the higher volume of my voice, is that some people tune it out and some people don't. So it's not, I mean, it does create a mood. It's there. I think it's a little bit more subconscious because of that lower volume. And I still play with that from episode to episode. I'm just still trying to find that sweet spot of volume ratio between the background music and my voice. Mm-hmm. One of the benefits, by the way, of laying a soundtrack underneath every minute, almost every minute of your podcast, is that, you know, those little things like brushing your hand on a desk, or just the fizzle or the hiss of, because I've got a condenser mic. I'm using a Yeti Blue or Blue Yeti, whatever the direction is. Blue Yeti Blue.
Yeah, Blue Yeti, yeah.
And I need to upgrade my mic stuff. But you wouldn't know listening to my show, because all of the little, like if I think about like a photo, all the graininess is being covered up by the music underneath. And that's, you know, it's like a little safety net in some sense. It helps the quality seem just a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I've noticed on my solo show that I do, is just like an audio journal, 5-10 minutes or whatever, an episode, is that my intro music has slowly crept longer and longer. Because it is nice when I listen back. It's like,
it is.
Okay, I don't have to hear that like moment or whatever that I breathe or that I whatever, yeah, you know, bang the desk or something. And it just covers a multitude of little audio sins.
Yeah. And you know, audio engineers will probably laugh at this and say, oh, well, of course. But somebody like me, who's just such an amateur with this thing, there is nothing more satisfying than managing a fade out on background music underneath your voice to the point where you know the music was there and you know it's not there anymore, but you didn't notice it go away. And
right,
and that is an art. Like, and yeah, I'm not good at it yet, but I'm getting better at it. And it's just a really cool feeling when you listen to it back and you realize, wow, I've actually managed to transition that music out pretty well.
Yeah. So I can totally identify with that, spending way too long like fiddling with what I'm sure nobody, like 90% of the audience, wouldn't even notice, but like, okay, should it be a 3-second fade or a 15-second fade? And
yeah,
is it dumb when it's like, and I'm sure it's worse for you and I when you're like, and when anybody who's editing their own voice, where you're just like even that much more whatever on edge or something. But because I know, right, when I've done it with video work and, you know, mixing audio there, I don't really obsess the same way, because when an audio drops, it's like, oh, it's just somebody talking. But
yeah,
it's
exactly,
your own voice, you're kind of like extra self-conscious about it for sure.
Yeah
the one thing I wanted to come back to just for a second was SoundCloud. And you mentioned like doing a Creative Commons search. Is it fairly common on SoundCloud, for folks who aren't familiar with it, for people to either have their track freely available and just need retribution, or attribution.
retribution. I don't want the retribution.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
SoundCloud's, I'm not a huge fan of the way they organize their site. So the only time I've been able to find tags, and somebody could probably, they're screaming at their computer right now saying, oh, it's easy to find the tags, but I have to like search just general search terms in the search field. And then off to the left, I can see like a filter by tag kind of thing. And it'll list all the tags that pop up in the search results, and you can click on one and it filters it. So searching is a little bit more difficult, but a ton of artists will have, you know, multiple albums worth of songs out, and then they'll make one or two per album downloadable for free. And, you know, the overall site culture is just make sure you point back to that artist when you use it and give them the props for that song. Some people have buy links where you can go to iTunes and buy the track. I still think that even if you've bought it, you need to point out, you know, this is the person and the artist and the song title that I've used. Even if I had to buy every song for every episode, I'd be fine. Patreon is, you know, I'm not making, you know, bazillion dollars for Patreon, but you know, I'm approaching the $200 mark per month, which is kind of weird to think. And a lot of people want those transcripts, evidently.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
And so, you know, if I wanted to buy every track every week, I could. I still would feel like I need to then point it out to people. I just, as an aside, I do the lore website on Squarespace, and I've been, what I do is I put the episodes up as like a blog post, and I input the, there's an audio widget that you can drag in, and then I put the Libsyn file location in there, and then it, so it sets up the audio player. And I used to just say, like, you know, music by Kai Engel, and then that hyperlink will take you to a SoundCloud account, but that doesn't help you find the exact songs in the show. So on episode 6 that just came out yesterday, I put soundtrack playlist available here, and I've got a hidden blog that's running on the website as well that will have basically music from episode whatever. And then I'm using the actual SoundCloud widgets that are stock in Squarespace. And so you go there and the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there's 5 of them right there that's literally the songs in the same order that they appear in the episode. And there's links to go right to the page, and clearly you can follow the artist and check out their other stuff. And there's some amazing, amazingly talented people on SoundCloud.
Yeah, so, that's awesome. I had noticed that before on episode 6, and that's a neat way too of doing it, because it's, you wouldn't want it necessarily within the episode because it gets, you know, players and whatever.
It bogs it down.
Yeah, but having that there is great, and then folks can find the artist and support them and find other music that's by them too. So. And you're also like, okay, this is what it seems. And again, I guess you have the other show that has 160 whatever episodes. And so this isn't like, this is your first kick of the can with podcasting, but you also have it. You're selling a t-shirt, I noticed too. Or is that?
Yeah. Which is weird. Something that Dave and I have never really considered doing for homework, but we probably should. You know, it's Teespring. So it's the, you know, the crowd, let me find the website, crowdfunding of a t-shirt in a sense. But it was weird. You know, I thought you'd have to set a campaign goal, and I set it at like 50, but they tell you right out the gate that you just got to get 3 orders and the shirt will print. So,
okay. Well, there you go.
You know, I've got a lot of listeners and not a lot of people have been interested in the shirt, but 11 people have been. So,
yeah, that's why I thought it was worth mentioning. And because I think again, like, because it's your, what's the word? I'm stumbling over my words here. You're 6 episodes in, so it's not like you have this huge backlog of, and you're starting to do, like, traditionally, maybe by your 50th episode, you'd have the t-shirt, and then you'd 75 episodes, you'd start the Patreon camp or whatever. But and I think, I'm saying this is a good thing that you're doing. Maybe it's coming out like I'm saying it's a bad idea that you're doing or something, that you're jumping the gun or whatever. But I just mean it's good. And I think setting the groundwork, and I don't know what your plans are long term for the series. But even if it is a 50 episode run or 25 episodes or 200 or whatever it ends up being, it still is a thing that's a packaged thing, like you said, with your book and the PDF transcripts and stuff. And it just helps, I think, to establish this as a, just the same way like your book would or whatever, as a standalone thing that people can enjoy and be fans of and recommend. And yeah, I think it's all awesome.
Yeah, I don't want people, maybe this is just a point of pride for me, but I like packaging things up. You know, I like to make sure that it's clear to people that this is legit. It's professional. And, you know, so lore has fallen into that same category for me. And, you know, I want the artwork to all feel like it all belongs together. I really think that, you know, it should have a t-shirt for people to wear. You know, there's the added word of mouth marketing to a t-shirt, but I'm not going to get a lot of benefits out of 11 people out in the entire world wearing the shirts around. Yeah. But you know, people are constantly telling their friends. You know, I've got a buddy on Twitter he had 2 friends who aren't on Twitter or at least don't float in the same circles. And so they don't know me. They don't know anything else. They just randomly bumped into Lore, fell in love and told him about it. And he said, yeah, that's my friend Aaron, you know? So it's weird to hear stories like that. I think one of the things you were hitting at was that it seems like I'm doing these things early. I think a lot of podcasts wait because they're waiting for critical mass. You know, they're waiting for their numbers to hit a certain point or whatever. So, you know, like if you only have 1,000 downloads per episode for an entire month, then putting out a shirt campaign probably won't be more than a frustration because out of the 1,000 people, you take 1% of that, maybe 100 people will be interested. Or no, I'm sorry, maybe 10 people? But right. I'm so 10. Bad at math. Yeah, math is hard. 10 people would be interested. And how many of those are actually going to buy? That 1% is my general rule, by the way. Like, take your Twitter follower number, figure out what 1% of that is, and that's how many active, engaged followers you have. And so I don't have a lot of those. But the show, it has been doing really well. I mean, people don't often talk about their stats, and I'm kind of shy with it as well. But, you know, between episodes 1 and 2, my daily download average was like 125 or so a day. And then I put out episode 2, and it kind of went up into the, you know, close to 200. And then something happened around episode, I don't know, 1, 2, 3, something happened around episode 4 where it just, I think part of it was it showed up in New and Noteworthy on iTunes, and word started to spread. And yeah, so now I'm dealing with something that's a bit different than I expected it to be.
Yeah, and that's where the New and Noteworthy thing is one of those things where I think it's the right place, right time, right kind of show. Because I'm just mentioning this for podcasters who listen, because I know often it's held up as a thing to attain. And it can work, but right. I know there's lots of podcasters I've talked to who their show is in New and Noteworthy, or we've had shows in New and Noteworthy, and it doesn't seem to do a thing. And then so there's like obviously a bunch of variables there beyond just appearing, right? The great artwork obviously is one big thing. Having X amount of episodes,
the show description, you know, how did you craft that show description? Things like that are super important. But you never think of it. You just think, oh, I'm in New and Noteworthy. I'm going to have thousands of downloads today.
Exactly. Yeah. Tim Cook has listened to my episode, but yeah. And, I guess I touched on it a bit before. What's sort of long-term plans for the series? Obviously knowing, you know, it's a lot of work to produce or it is work to produce an episode, and that obviously takes time out of your day job, so to speak, and things. So what are sort of your long-term plans for lore?
Yeah. You know, I did an experiment, so 2 weeks ago yesterday, episode 5 came out, and I was moving on to write and record and produce episode 6. And I said to myself, let's see how quickly I can get this done. It was interesting material for episode 6. It was stuff that I knew really well already. Danvers State Hospital, you know, the whole thing with insane asylums. And so I put myself to the challenge of, let me see what I can get done quickly. And I managed... in the 2 weeks between episode 5 and 6 coming out, I managed to write, record, and produce 2 episodes. So in theory, I could be weekly. You know, that in theory, I can make those things happen. The reality is that it just happened to be 2 weeks where I was in a lull with the freelance work. You know how some things, you know, you wrap up a client project or you've sent off a draft and you're waiting for feedback. And so you have spare time. I do a lot of freelance stuff in the evening. So, you know, you just fill that with, all right, well, I'm just going to research this topic and write this thing. And some topics are going to write easier than others. That's also a benefit to me getting them done. But I think I've proven to myself that I could at least, if the show paid me for my time so that I didn't have to, you know, spend other time doing work, then I could potentially do this thing every week. It does seem a little, I don't know. You only get 20 minutes every 2 weeks. It seems like, wow, that was it. Now I've got to wait 2 weeks for that. You know, but then you look at a show like, you know, The Memory Palace with Nate DeMeo, who sometimes he takes a month before episodes and the new episode comes out and it's 5 minutes long. You know, and I know full well that those 5 minutes were hours of work for him, but it's still, from a listener standpoint, I get the disappointment of, man, I wish that was longer and, or I wish it was more frequent. So I would love to go weekly. I just don't want to burn out. And I also, like, there aren't an unlimited number of topics,
right?
You know, Apple's going to continue to put out iOS updates, which is great, great topic material for all sorts of 3-hour talking head podcasts. And that's one thing I'm super jealous about for them, is because they've constantly got topics just handed to them. You know, some company bought another company. Let's talk about it for 2 hours. And you can do that. But there aren't frequently new werewolf stories or, right, you know, new monsters discovered that, you know, have a deep historical history or historical history. That's great. Yeah. I write well. Yeah. So yeah, that's my fear. You know, I would love to go weekly. I'd love to satisfy people. I want to protect myself from burning out. I don't want the quality to go down. And I also don't want to run out of topics too quickly. Yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. I think the weekly idea, I think speaking from what little I know of you, but the genre anyways, and that style of listening, I think there's something, even with the sort of Netflix generation that we're in now, where like everything, you just get handed a lump of episodes. Yeah. There's something lost in that. And maybe this is just old man Chris.
No, I get
about
this.
That,
yeah.
You know, that anticipation, and then also the everyone talking about it because it comes out on the Tuesday or whatever day you're releasing on. And then that, the water cooler discussion of that the week afterwards, sort of like, you know, like we talked about with Serial or whatever too, where that would happen. And especially this kind of show, I think people, the anticipation is greater than having a ton of content, especially when you think of like right this, this is a podcasting counseling session maybe, but when you think of right now where you've got 6 episodes, it feels like, oh man, I want to get 20 out there or whatever. And that would be quicker is to go weekly. But then, you know, in a few months when you've got that many episodes, whatever that is, we won't bother with the math, but the, you know, for someone starting fresh with your show, it's pretty daunting to have that many episodes, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I put out episode 1 on, it was like the middle to like third week of March. And it was about a week later, I put out the second episode because I couldn't hold it back. It was done. I was ready to go. You know what? I just had to get it out there. Yeah. And as a good friend of mine, you know, Adam Clark.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. A.V. Clark. Is it avclark.com?
Yes.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was formerly involved with this. Founder of this. But yeah.
He's a good buddy. I chat with him about this stuff all the time. And he said, you know, Aaron, you just gotta pick a schedule and stick with it. Even though you want to put your stuff out, you know, more frequently, you can't just put it out whenever you want because people begin to depend on a schedule. And I think those are the two ends of that spectrum. You know, you talk about the Netflix culture and, you know, I binged on Daredevil. I'm not afraid to admit it. It was a fantastic show and it was all there for me to watch, but now it's done and I've got nothing and I don't know when to look forward to new stuff. 2016. Come on. I'll forget what happened by then, but doing a regular schedule is on the opposite end of that. It's not that more frequent, but random. It's clockwork, you know, every 2 weeks, every Monday morning, a new episode comes out. I have episode 7 ready to go. I could put it out tomorrow and I have to sit on that thing for the next, you know, 13 days.
Which that's where I know I've had discussions with like Mike Hurley and Relay and stuff about this, like just that, maybe it's a universal podcaster disease, but it definitely seems to be one that's common is that like, okay, this is out. I just want to get it out there because I've worked so hard on this. So you got to hear it now. And I want to hear people's responses and stuff.
Right.
But that's what I think too, with your type of show is, it's, you know, emotionally, I don't know if draining is the right word, but it would be in the same way that watching like House of Cards and stuff where it's just like intense all the time. And not that you have all like that same kind of intensity necessarily, but that idea of like it's emotionally draining in a different way than Apple Tech podcasts are, obviously. And I don't know. I think you're on the right track. And I have to agree with Adam on that too, the sort of scheduled thing. That's been the thing that I've impressed on people we work with here at Good Stuff too, is just that whatever you're going to set out to do that and just do that consistently is your goal, obviously, and things, life happens. And that's where having an episode in the can is kind of nice to just be able to, you know, all of a sudden your computer blows up next week or something, but you can still publish an episode even though you're not able to record one or whatever. So anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and next phase stuff for Lore as well involves sponsorships and I want to do them right. I don't want to, you know, I don't want a 17 minute ad read at the end of an episode. You know, and I mentioned this on Twitter maybe a week and a half ago or 2 weeks ago on the Lore account. I just asked people, I said, hey, you know, if it meant, you know, that these shows happen more often, or if it meant that the show can continue as it is because it's funded, would you put up with a couple ads on the show? And everybody it was like a unanimous yes. But the question came up, you know, where would you put them? And to me, an episode of Lore is a story and I don't want to interrupt the story. So I would never do a mid-roll. You know, I wouldn't say, and let's take a break and talk about Squarespace. You know, that's just not, I don't think that's the way that it should be done for this particular show. We do it on homework. You know, Dave and I, for the last month, I think we've had 4 sponsors per episode every week, which is fantastic. But it means that, you know, we've got to watch the clock and every 12 minutes or so, we have to say, hey, why don't we pause that and let's take a break for our sponsor, and then we get right back into the topic. And it does break the flow a little bit.
Yeah, especially if you're, I'm just thinking, segueing from like talking about lobotomy to here's Squarespace with their new.
Yeah. I don't think it's good for the sponsor, and I don't think it's good for the story at all. So I could consider, you know, small 30-second pre-rolls. What is that? They call them pre-rolls, sweet rolls, something like that. But I think what I would rather do is give a client, you know, 45 to 60 seconds at the end, you know, when it's all done, when I'm doing my, you know, once you finish the episode, you'll hear that there's a little bit of silence with background music, no talking. And then I let people know that Laura is a bi-weekly podcast. It's produced by me, Aaron Mankey. I let them know that they can go to my website and look at my novels. And they can, you know, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, all the basics. It's all done classy and whatnot. And I want to continue to do, if I bring in sponsors, to do it that way. So I'm in talks with some sponsors right now. We've just got to nail down rates and what episodes they want to book. So there is the potential that Laura will be a self-sufficient podcast that could. You know, pay for my time, which would be really nice.
Yeah, and that's awesome. That's great that you've hit on a great sort of nerve or whatever, as it were, that people are really keen on, and putting in the work and effort to be ready for the success that's going to come your way and has come your way already. So, what I end the show with usually is a bit of gear discussion. But I don't know if you have you mentioned the Blue Yeti that you're doing.
My gear is so basic, dude. I mean, seriously, I've got the Blue Yeti. I use GarageBand. I'm still running 10.9 on my Mac. I haven't gone to Yosemite yet because I run an old copy of Billings from Market Circle for my freelance business. And I'm afraid if I go up to Yosemite, Billings will break.
Right.
that's just how I roll. I don't want my work machine to break. So I don't upgrade. I usually wait about a year.
Smart.
that's my typical thing. Yeah. So I'm using an old copy of GarageBand that like I can't upgrade it anymore until I go to Yosemite. And I like it. I like the wood grain. It's nice and I can duck things and whatever. And it's fine. My mic, I've got a pop filter on it that doesn't seem to work too well. I set it on a cardboard box so that you can hear my elbows when they move on the table.
Which probably adds to the ambiance of the creepy.
Oh, like you're talking about. Yeah. What was that noise?
Yeah.
Oh, it was just, he's just taking a drink.
Yeah. Exactly.
I try not to do that stuff when I'm recording, but I also need to keep my arm on the, like hovered, ready to hit the space bar to stop the recording. So, what else do I use? I've got headphones over the ears. They're just, Audio Technica.
Yeah.
They make some good stuff. That's my equipment.
Which I think that's, again, your podcasters tend to sweat the gear and then the content comes secondary.
Right.
I'm guilty of that. But I think a show like yours proves the point of focus on the content and the gear. Because now you could, you know, theoretically you have your money, a bit of money coming in, Patreon, et cetera, and a sponsor comes along and then you can buy the nice mic and you're not in the hole to begin with. And
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a smart way to go. And then the other thing I'd end each show with, I was going to say you cover, you host with Libsyn, you mentioned your files are there and your site is with Squarespace. Any other interesting tech hooks? Is Facebook worthwhile for your podcast? Has that worked out? That's sort of been shows.
Yeah, I don't use it a lot in my personal life. I use Instagram and I push Instagram photos to Facebook for my personal account and people will comment and I'll never see it because I just don't think to log in there.
Yeah.
But on a whim, I set up a Facebook page for Lore, whatever it is, facebook.com/lorepodcast. And you've got to get, I think, 30 likes on a page to get the insights that Facebook offers you. And I got enough of my friends together to get 30. And I checked today and I was like close to 180. I mean, some people just use Facebook. That's what they use. And people are liking the show and they're leaving comments and it's kind of neat. So I'm learning about that myself. I prefer Twitter. That's where I live. So
yeah. To listen to, what's the podcast? Stratechery, Ben something. And, I'm drawing a blank. I'll put a link in the show notes, but it's sort of a tech finance podcast that he does. And to listen, but he comes from the perspective of someone who lives in, I don't want to say Japan, but, not North America anyways, that's for sure.
Right.
And just his perspective on the rest of the world's use of Facebook compared to what you and I probably hear from our tech bubble. Mm-hmm. Apple is the best circle that we're we're in or whatever.
Yes.
And where Facebook is like spit on and disparaged, and you know, and obviously we all acknowledge that Facebook is used, but it's kind of like by my mom or something, you know. But right. You know, the rest of the world, a lot of the world, I won't try and cover the whole world with that statement, but a lot of the world uses it instead of having a website, instead of having Twitter, and so, like, that's the thing. Yeah. They're exchanging, they're doing business on it, setting up meetings with it. Like, it's very common outside of our little Maya, I guess, bubble that I tend to sort of float in. And mm-hmm. Yeah, anyways, it's just been interesting. And so, but it still is hit and miss, I know, for a lot of podcasters where they don't get the engagement on Facebook, so it feels like they're spinning their wheels, but then other people seem to draw it in. And I think, I would guess, a show like yours does, because it allows for a discussion of an episode, let's say, and maybe that's not happening yet, but it seems to me like that could be a thing where people would be like, oh, that was so crazy about blah, 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 and, you know, going deeper on a theory or something.
Yeah, like I think at some point I'm going to have to sit down and really brainstorm what's the next level of listener interaction. You know, is it some sort of place where discussions can happen? When I put together the premium transcripts, I've got so many amazing photographs that, I mean... You should see some of the photos for this insane asylum one, you know, just pictures of people in, yeah, in almost medieval looking restraints, and the pictures of the actual lobotomies taking place are pretty wild. That's the kind of stuff I would love to show people. You know, I think social media experts would say, oh, post that stuff on Twitter and, you know, then a link to the show and you'll get fans and it'll be viral and go around. But I also don't want to give away anything because I feel like my episodes they're almost like short stories. And so I don't know that I want to,
yeah,
I don't want somebody to sit down ready to listen already knowing that there's a photo of a lobotomy. You know it, right. So I don't want to spoil it for them like I've spoiled it for you. So, and that's the thing. I don't, so much of the episode is stuff that I want to save for that moment when somebody hits play, that I don't know how to share all that good stuff yet. But maybe discussion groups on Facebook or something is one of those things that happens. So yeah, it's not my bag, but it works for a lot of people and I'm happy to put stuff there. And Squarespace allows me to just push, you know, I flip a lever inside the post setting, and when I post the episode, it just goes right to Facebook.
So yeah. So you can keep your hands clean of Facebook.
Yeah. I don't need to use disinfectant or anything. Yeah. It's great.
Okay. And so the last thing I do in the show with, and I understand if you don't have time to prep, because like we said, this was a last minute scheduling thing, but is a podcast that you listen to outside of obviously your own and then also the apps that you listen to podcasts on. So I don't know if you have your mm-hmm. device of choice or whatever handy and whatever, 5, 10.
Yeah. Yeah. I checked your site as we were connecting through Skype and I prepped.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. So I use Pocket Casts and I know that there are other options out there. I like I've paid for the login and sync feature in it. So I can throw the web player on while I'm at my desktop and listen to that. Do you use Pocket Casts?
Yeah, I love it. I've tried, yeah, like we know all the other ones that are out there and
yeah,
whatever. But yeah, for me, that's the one that's stuck the most.
I don't need fancy like audio scrubbing, weird stuff. I want to hear it as it was intended and produced because I know what it takes to produce an episode. I know what it's like to pour your... And I want people to hear it as it's intended. So I rarely listen to anything at, you know, 1.25 speed or 1.5. I do audiobooks that way sometimes, but only after the first couple chapters. I want to feel like I'm comfortable with the person who's speaking, and then I'll turn the speed up a little bit. But that's when you're doing like a 12-hour book and you just want to get through it a bit quicker. So I'm in Pocket Casts. I for a guy who does two podcasts, I don't actually listen to a lot of podcasts. Mostly because when I'm working, there's a lot of typing involved and I can't listen to words being spoken while I'm typing.
Yeah.
But on my list, I have the Drive to Work, the Magic the Gathering podcast, is the most underproduced, spastic episode thing you could ever listen to. It literally, it's a guy's drive to work. Mark Rosewater, he's the lead designer, and design means something very different for games than what I do. He doesn't do artwork. He like builds the concepts of the game. At Magic the Gathering, which is a card game that's been around for, I don't know, 23 years. And he's like the head of all this stuff. And so when he drives his 30 minutes to work, I think he literally sticks his iPhone in his front pocket. Literally, I think, because he still wears the long untucked flannel shirts like somebody in Seattle. He works out there. Picture like Eddie Vedder, who's gotten a little older, and he stuffs this iPhone in his front pocket with maybe like a little, you know, lightning port or headphone jack mic and just rambles about a topic for the entire drive. And then he's at work and he says, all right, I got to go to work. And that's it. But it's deeply historical stuff on the game. So I like that. He's a little crazy. I have to kind of pace myself with it, but I like Crit Juice. I'm a gamer, so I like playing games. Crit Juice is a bunch of semi-professional comedians who have turned Dungeons and Dragons into a drinking game. So,
how do you say the name of it?
Crit Juice, C-R-I-T. Oh, yeah,
gotcha.
And you got to start at the beginning if you ever do it. But they're about an hour long, so they take an investment. But the ones that really get me going are 99% Invisible. I mean, Roman Mars is just. He's just a god of podcast hosting. What he does, how he says it, everything, his style, his sensibility, it's perfect. So I completely respect him. He follows me on Twitter now. It's nice. So weird. Yeah, I know. It's so weird. I've got these dreams of maybe someday being on Radiotopia. And I think Laura would fit perfectly there.
Well, yeah, you could totally see it. Like I was thinking of that as another option or another example of this type where you could see one of your episodes being something that's covered on theirs.
Yeah,
or whatever. So
it's that storytelling, you know, well-produced podcast kind of network. And
the only
thing
you need is this is my one knock on 90% Invisible is the way that they like if you said something in this interview and then I'd repeat it just like you said it with like extra gravitas, which I get like the gist of that. And sometimes it's really appropriate because you're like, whoa, did they just say that? And then but other times it's like you talked about a cheeseburger and I say cheeseburger after you and you're like. Okay, I didn't really need to.
Right. Anyway, if you approach game. A show like 99% as a audio version of like news site journalism, topical, but still like, you know, like a finding the topical article on Yahoo or something. In some ways, the way that they approach the material is a lot like that, you know, having quotes from people. Their quotes just happen to be audio quotes instead of putting them in quotation marks.
But
I'm a designer, so I appreciate his slant on the show, which is exploring the architecture of certain things and how thoughtful design makes life better. Criminal is a fantastic podcast. It was probably the biggest inspiration behind doing lore the way I did it. Telling a story, setting it to music. Criminal's amazing. We frequently trade places on iTunes as far as the charts go. And that's always a little neat thing to smile about that there's the show that inspired me. And right now I outrank it, you know?
Nice.
And I, like I said before, I love Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. They're out usually every week. Adam Savage and two of the guys from tested.com. Will Smith, not that Will Smith, and Norman Chan. And Adam Savage worked with George Lucas on Star Wars movies and he's got a huge special effects background and, he likes gadgets and building things and it resonates with my nerd, maker, nature. So, that's fun stuff to listen to.
Nice.
Yeah. So I do all that in Pocket Cast on my iPhone, on the computer. And I recently installed it on my iPad just thinking that maybe, like if I'm working in the basement, I can have the iPad down there playing stuff. Who knows? But yeah.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good list. And a lot of 99% Invisible obviously comes up a lot from the previous guests, but or maybe not obviously. I say that only because it's a show I'm familiar with. But a lot of the other ones are new to me anyways, and hopefully new to listeners as well of stuff to check out. So, okay, well, in closing, where can folks find you and follow you and all that kind of stuff on the internet these days?
The best place would be to start over at lorepodcast.com. That's L-O-R-E, you know, like folklore, but just lore.
Yeah.
And on the about page, there's links to follow Lore on Facebook and Twitter and also to follow me on Twitter. And I'm A-M-A-H-N-K-E. And I like chatting with people. I'm not one of those high and mighties who doesn't respond to people on Twitter. I think that's a dickish thing to do. And
there you go.
Yeah. So if you like the show, say hi and let me know. And I would love to say thanks to you.
So yeah, my thanks to Aaron for coming on the show. Of course, you can find all the links to everything we discussed, the podcast Aaron likes, over at goodstuff.fm/smym/86. And if you want to support myself and my podcasting efforts here, you can visit that link, goodstuff.fm/smym/86. See the link to a Small Orange. If you're looking for some web hosting, I can hardly recommend Small Orange and check them out. WordPress to whatever high scale app thing you might need hosted, they can take care of you. There's a little tutorial video there that I show just basically registering your domain, getting WordPress installed to your first blog post, how easy it is to get all that stuff set up. So check them out. And then, of course, I have my Patreon page as well, just like Aaron. If you visit patreon.com/iChris, you can see ways you can support me there if you so desire. I'm on Twitter, iChris on Twitter. Goodstuff underscore FM is Goodstuff's Twitter account. Show Me Your Mic has its own as well, SMYM underscore FM. And you can email me, chris@goodstuff.fm, if you've got questions, comments, suggestions for the show. We'll be continuing the series that I sort of, not series, but having Kyle Roderick on a couple times again here periodically, fellow Good Stuff founder guy, and just talking a bit behind the scenes with running a podcast network. And we thought we'd sort of open up a little bit about some of the struggles and the triumphs and things like that. So if you've got questions about running podcast networks and sort of not just... like, we can answer questions about podcasting, period, obviously, too, if you have those kind of questions. But I've put that out there. I haven't got a lot of response. There's a lot of podcasts that fill that space. But maybe stuff, just dynamics of running a podcast network you have questions about. You can either email me, chris@goodstuff.fm, like I said, or ping me on Twitter with something at iChris, and we'd be happy to include it on a future episode. So I think that's it for now. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye.